This is how signals cross the gap. Electric signals move along in a nerve to the gap at the end and make a powerful liquid come out of the nerve tip, and that liquid crosses the gap and enters the next nerve and carries along the message that the first nerve had begun. If every one of our nerve cells sprayed out the slowdown liquid Loewy found, however, we'd be in trouble. We'd think a thought or try to move our arms, and everything would start going slower and slower and slower. Luckily, there are other types of transmitter liquids in our body. Some speed up the cells they reach, while others simply help them form new connections. Dozens have been found by now. One of these additional transmitters that Loewy also helped comprehend was initially called acceleran stuff for its action in speeding up the cells it reached. We call it adrenaline. Each of the neurotransmitter submarines has a different shape, and if it finds the right berth for itself, it gets tugged right in. That tug comes from the same sort of static electricity that gives us a shock on a dry day. Several regions on the transmitter molecule have extra negative electric force from a concentration of electrons there, while matching regions on the target nerve cell have extra positive electric force from a relative lack of electrons. When the correct two regions get close, it's as if deckhands were pulling on docking ropes. They snap together tight. If the process ended there, we'd be in trouble once again. For when the neurotransmitter arrives, the nerve it hits can now start firing, with its sodium pumps opening wide. But if the transmitter remains stuck there head first, that firing wouldn't stop. The signal from the past would keep on recurring. Luckily, there are yet other molecules operating in the gap between nerve cells in our brain and throughout, and their job is to act as demolition crews, disassembling the neurotransmitter almost as soon as it's made the journey across. In a most convenient burst of ecological efficiency, when they've torn apart the transmitter to its constituent parts, they then generally lead those parts back to the original sending nerve, where the parts are reabsorbed, rebuilt, and all memory of the previous voyage wiped clean, led toward the surface to be ready to be sent out again. Electric forces pull all those parts along. Without that power, none of this would happen. Lots of mysteries became clear after Loewy's work. Caffeine has been drunk for centuries, with commentators even in the 1600s complaining that young scholars used it to excess, to stay alert when they were trying to catch up on their studies. But no one knew how it worked. Understanding electrical connections at the level of cell surfaces in the brain changed that. A common transmitter between brain cells is the bulky molecule called adenosine. When it reaches its target brain cells, it tends to slow down the rate of firing. What caffeine does is slip into adenosine's docking sites. With those berths now full, the adenosine can't get in. We might be exhausted, we might be craving deep rest, but with our receptor brain cells speckled with caffeine, our desperate adenosine outpourings can't find enough free berths to latch on, and so can't get those cells to slow. As the years went on, after Loewy's discovery, even more precise details became clear. Nancy Ostrowski was a young American who'd once considered being a nun, and by the 1970s had switched to research. But she seems to have channeled some of the moral strictures from her previous life into her new work. In her laboratory outside Washington, D.C., she would get something like a small guillotine ready, then encourage mice to have sex, and then decapitate them while they were thus engaged. With sufficiently quick blenderizing of their brains, she found that many of their brain cells had been pouring out endorphins. These are naturally produced neurotransmitters shaped much like heroin or morphine. When they cross synaptic gaps and dock with waiting receptors, mammals experience great pleasure. Endorphins are temporary, but our overall moods are more long-lasting. Some people are like P.G. Woodhouse's Bertie Wooster, for whom cheerfulness kept on poking in. Others are the opposite, and quite happy to wring the necks of all those who constantly tell them to be more chirpy as they go through the day. The more precise our knowledge of how electrically charged molecules and ions move inside the brain, the more easily we can reach in and control our moods, and to some extent, even our temperaments.